Please take your Bibles and let's go to Mark chapter 5, and we'll begin in verse 21. And if you're using a church Bible, that's page 840. The question Mark is answering throughout the whole beginning of this book, the first half of the book and more, who is Jesus? Who is this Emmanuel? Who is this child who came to be with us? What we have here in Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 21, is one marvelous story about two individuals whose lives are sandwiched together for a few moments. These two people couldn't be more different. The first person is a woman with a chronic, debilitating illness that has isolated her from society and created an existence that is, in essence, a living death. The other person is a prominent, successful dad whose daughter is facing a major health crisis that threatens her life. So we have here two kinds of suffering people. Both of them are desperate. Both of them have completely run out of answers. Both of them must learn to trust Jesus Christ with their death and with their life. I recently heard a message on this passage by Sam Albury that helped me understand what's going on here in a new way. And he helped me realize that Jesus' message to us in this passage really is pretty simple. Two words. Trust me. Trust me. That's what he says to us in this passage. That's what Jesus is saying to you this morning. Trust me. But trusting Jesus certainly is not easy to do when your life is falling apart and personal disaster is imminent and his timing is really bad and your pain is hard. It's circumstances like that where your faith is tested to find out if it is real. How should you and I trust God when all is not as it should be? We'll see in this beautiful story three things that Jesus is saying to us. Trust me when I won't be hurried. Trust me when you are desperate. And trust me and I will turn your world upside down. First, trust me when I won't be hurried. Trust me when I won't be hurried. Mark 5 and verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so she may be made well and live." And he went with him. So what we have here is an account of Jesus' patience. You can't hurry Jesus. He is deliberate. He is thorough. He is very, very patient in the way that he works with us. And that's hard because we're not patient people. I don't think I'm speaking just for myself. I'm talking about us as individuals and as a culture. We're not patient people. Jesus' patience tries our patience. And as human beings, we don't understand his use of time. Right at the very beginning of our passage, we meet Jairus. Jairus, we're told, is the ruler of the synagogue. He's a very important person in this community. He's the lay president of the synagogue, like the Jewish church where people come together and meet. So we presume that he is a man whose life is devoted to God. He's respected. He's prominent. Very likely he's wealthy compared to other people in that community. But all that matters right now is that he's the dad. And what he is facing is the absolute worst case scenario for a father. All of his power, all of his influence, all of his wealth won't help him when it comes to this. He is totally powerless in the face of death. You can't bribe death. You can't legislate against death. You can't command death. His girl is dying. And Jairus knows it. He recognizes it. He's seen this kind of thing before. I mean, he's the lay president of the synagogue. He knows what happens in the lives of people in his flock. He understands the reality of what is going on here. And he is helpless to do anything about it. All his worldly wealth, his influence, all the respect he has make no difference when it comes to this. We live in a world where people die. There's just no way to ignore it. There's no way to avoid it. You can deny it, but it still comes. And every one of us in this room must face our own death or the death of someone that we love. What will you do about it? Well, for Jairus, this most dangerous fever changes everything. People like Jairus, you know, people, the Jewish leadership, the muckety-mucks, the power people in the Jewish religious hierarchy have not been welcoming to Jesus. They seemingly are not Jesus' best friends. But something very important has changed. So this man comes to Jesus and implores him, begs him as a father. As a father, not as a religious leader, not as a discerner of theology and heresy. No, he comes as a dad, and he begs Jesus to come to his house. Where else can we go? My little girl is dying. Won't you come and lay your hands on her? Won't you do it now? Can you please come and fix this thing? I know you can. I know you can. It's the only hope she has for life. And Jesus says, yeah. It looks like all is going to be well until the interruption shows up. There's this woman. Yeah, this woman. Verse 24, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Now, what's striking here is that this woman is almost in every possible way the radical opposite of Jairus. She's anonymous. We don't even know her name. She has lost everything she has to this humiliating illness. She's bleeding, so she's anemic. She's tired. She feels sick all the time. And in that world, in that culture, she is spiritually toxic. She's unclean. For how long? 12 years. 12 years. Why so long? Well, think about it. Think about it. Where were you 12 years ago? What were you doing 12 years ago? For all that amount of time, she has been suffering physically, socially, emotionally, financially. According to the law, she can't touch anyone. No one can touch her. And this has been going on for as long as she can remember. And seemingly, there's nothing she can do about it. So we have two people. We have one man who's got a crisis. He's got an emergency. His little girl is about to die. And then we have a woman who has been coping with her miserable life for years and years and years. One is chronic and one is acute. Chronic, when we talk about somebody who has a chronic illness, it's an illness that just goes on and on and on, kind of like your arthritis. You know, it's just there. It's something you live with every day of your life. When we're talking about acute, we're talking about an emergency. You know, somebody's having a heart attack out in the hallway. You know, get the EMTs here now. And so what's Jesus going to do? He's got somebody who's got a chronic illness, and he's got somebody who's got an acute illness. So what's he going to do? He addresses the woman with a chronic illness. This makes no sense. This is irrational. I mean, somebody needs to take Jesus out and give him a course in triage, right? This is just absolutely nuts. It really borders on messianic malpractice, doesn't it? This girl is dying. And everything comes to a screeching halt. So he can have a conversation with this lady. Can't this woman wait for an hour or two? So one thing that this story teaches us is that God's blessing and God's grace come according to his schedule and not ours. God never operates according to our sense of time. Have you ever noticed how different people in different cultures have a different sense of time? Even cultures in the United States, certainly cultures overseas, you know, just, I mean, I've been places where, you know, church starts at 10 o'clock and that means people just start wandering in and maybe they'll start singing at 11 and, you know, you don't know. I mean, every culture in every world and different people have different senses the way they approach time. It's all relative. And everybody has a sense that this is the right time and that is not. But for Jesus, come on, seriously. You can't be a healer and just have no sense of what's truly important. His delay is especially shocking when you stop and think about who he is stopping for. A woman. A nameless woman at that. A powerless, anonymous, bankrupt, broken woman. I also think it's important here to point out how Jesus reverses the value system of our world. And this is a perfect example of that. Jairus is a male in a society in which men had essentially all of the power. She is a female. Jairus is a synagogue ruler. The woman is ceremonially unclean, and she hasn't been allowed to attend worship for over a decade. Can't even go to the synagogue. This man, Jairus, is almost certainly rich. The woman, we know, is absolutely destitute. She spent everything on doctors and healing balms and medicines and everything else, and all of which was futile. So we've got this man who's at the very top of the social food chain, and we've got a woman who's at the absolute bottom of the social order. Yet Jesus turns to the woman with zero social capital, zero economic power, and he gives her his full attention, and he treats her like there is no one else in the world at that moment that matters to him. No one but her. She has his full attention. He turns to the woman with zero status, zero power, and he makes a male and religious leader wait in the moment of his greatest need. Makes him wait. Now stop and think about how crazy this is. You think about how absolutely insane this is. Here is the guy that could unlock economic, evangelistic access to the entire community. We're talking about the synagogue ruler. You win this guy, the whole community is going to come over to Jesus, right? Yeah, and Jesus says, no, go cool your heels outside. You can just wait over there, please. I'm busy. Isn't this the way the gospel works, really? Isn't this what the gospel does? Turns everything upside down. Over and over and over again in Scripture, the insider ends up on the bottom, and the outsider ends up on the top. And Jesus very intentionally, very deliberately connects to the outsider, the lady at the bottom of the pile. Why? Well, by the time we get to the end of the Gospel of Mark, we're going to know the cross. And we're going to know in the cross that the way to up is down. The way to get power is to give it away and serve. The way to be clothed in the absolute eternal righteousness of God is to admit that you don't have any. And the way to have a great life is to be willing to die. And the way to have a fulfilled life is to seek fulfillment in the happiness of others and serving others. So Jesus turns absolutely everything upside down. It's unbelievable. So God's sense of timing is always going to be a mystery to us. He has a different clock than we do. And things that you and I think are absolute emergencies, he takes a different approach. He isn't always in a hurry. He has other plans. He has a different agenda. In fact, it seems to me that Jesus delays us more than airlines in a snowstorm. I mean, it's just like, this is the plan. You know, you're going to cool your heels. You're going to wait on me. So while Jesus is tending to the needs of this nameless woman, he's teaching Jairus, trust me. Trust me. To you, Jairus, my jumping into the ambulance to get to your daughter ASAP is the most important thing in the world. But Jairus, I'm doing more than you know. All you can see right now is your little girl. You are zoned in on that. That's all you can focus on. But I want you to know I am doing much, much more. And there's a real sense in that Jesus is looking over Jairus' shoulder, and he's looking straight at you and I, the readers of the Gospel of Mark. He's saying, do you remember those storms back in Mark chapter 4? How you thought I didn't care about you. You thought I didn't love you. But I did, didn't I? I want you to know I still do. I have not forgotten you. Jesus will not be worried, hurried. Jesus Christ will not be hurried. Jesus Christ will not be rushed. He will always do it right. One pastor says, if God looks like he is really doing malpractice in your life, it's because there is some massively crucial fact that you simply don't have. It's just not available to you. You don't have all the information. You say, what are you talking about? Well, look here. As far as Jairus is concerned, as far as the disciples are concerned, as far as anyone else thinks, what Jesus is doing here is unconscionable. A dereliction of duty. It's absolutely ridiculous for Jesus to let a little girl die in order to deal with a woman's long-standing health issue. She could easily have waited. But here's the thing. You and I know something, don't we? Yeah, we've got an inside track here. We're not quite as shocked as Jairus and the disciples. We know a couple of crucial facts. The first crucial fact that we know that they don't know is that for Jesus Christ to raise a girl from the dead and cure a fever, it's no different. It's no harder for him to raise that little girl from the dead than it is to cure her of her fever. It's just as easy for him to have her get up once she's dead as it is when she's got a temperature of 104. It's no harder for him. No problem at all. And the second important crucial fact that we know here is that Jesus now has an opportunity to take a quasi-superstitious woman who has received a bodily healing and turn her into a life-transformed disciple of Jesus for life, for all eternity. That opportunity can't wait. He has to capitalize on that right now. Question for you. Do you trust Jesus when his timing is terrible? Do you trust him then? Do you trust that Jesus? That's not easy. He made Catherine and I wait 8.5 years before he gave us children. 8.5 years. That may not seem long to you, but for us it was like eternity. All along he was saying, trust me. Before I came to Graham Church, I was in a situation where I thought I was going to be for 1 or 2 years, at the outside I would be in this role for a couple of years at the most. I was there for 10 years. And God kept saying, cool your heels, kid. Just wait. Just sit there. Just wait. All along he's saying, do you trust me? Some of you have been waiting for a relationship or a career move, a health breakthrough, for your husband to get saved. And he's saying, trust me. Don't be afraid. Just believe. Will you? Trust me when I won't be hurried. Number two, trust me when you are desperate. I don't think you could find two more desperate people in all of the Bible than these two. I mean, these two really define what it is to be desperate. For 12 years, no one has touched her. Some of you say, wow, I would like that. But most people, that would be absolutely unbearable to have no human contact, to be a pariah for no fault of your own. She's Jewish and she follows the law and she knows that she is unclean because of her bleeding and she's just about a hopeless case. She is desperate. She has nowhere else to go. And she is exactly where God wants her to be. Right where God wants her to be. And like Jairus, she has faith that Jesus can heal. She knows that she is helpless. She knows that she is helpless, and she also knows that Jesus majors on helpless. Yes, he does. That's where he is very, very good. Some of you need reminding of that today. Looking at the messes of your own life and dealing with your own version of uncleanness and toxicity and guilt and shame and helplessness and desperation. You should learn from this desperate, helpless woman and reach out to Jesus. Reach out to him. Touch him. Grab something of him. To find hope where all hope is lost. So Jesus turns to look to see who did it, and she runs up and falls at his feet. She wants to run and hide. She is scared out of her mind. She is scared for the last 12 years. She's avoided all contact with people, and now she has come into the crowd to touch Jesus, and she's had the audacity to actually touch him. And she is being openly called out in public. He insists on her doing this in front of everybody. Why? Well, she needs it, doesn't she? And so she tells him her whole story, because Jesus wants to identify this woman. Why? Well, she needs to know why she has been healed. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Daughter, your faith has made you well. It isn't positive thinking. It isn't faith in the universe. It isn't magic. Jesus doesn't have magic clothes. It is simply that she comes to him and she trusts him with this. In her desperation, she turns to Jesus. And so he brings her out in public because everyone else needs to know that Jesus has not been made unclean by this woman. Jesus has made this woman clean. Everything that they have ever known about uncleanness doesn't matter here. Anyone else would have been spiritually polluted by her, but not Jesus Christ. She is well. She is clean. She is whole. Her shame has been taken away by just a touch. I mean, you can tell that she is afraid, but she hasn't done anything wrong. In fact, she has done something wonderfully right, hasn't she? Jesus says, that's why I'm here. Go in peace. It's okay now. This is how it was meant to be, and the same is true for you and I. You are not too messy for Jesus. You're not too polluted for Jesus. You're not too unclean for Jesus. You're not too desperate. He's there to be grabbed. Trust me when you're desperate. Number three, trust me and I'll turn your world upside down. Trust me and I'll turn your world upside down. So this delay has been wonderful for the nameless woman. But for Jairus, it's been agonizing. I mean, we're talking about a wasted opportunity here, a squandered chance at something absolutely incredible. And for Jairus' daughter, it's been fatal. 35, verse 35. While he was speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" So these people arrive from the house and they say, "It's too late, your daughter's dead, don't bother him." The insinuation is clear. What help do you think a teacher is going to be at this point? She's dead. But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside. He took the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and he went in where the child was. So Jesus basically says to Jairus, "Trust me. Don't fear, only believe." And I think when Jesus looks at Jairus after that final delay, he's saying, "Don't fear, only believe." He's saying to Jairus, and he's saying to you and I, "Will you trust me when things are this bad? Will you trust me now?" It's not just that we trust Jesus when everything is going wrong. We have to trust Jesus when everything has gone wrong. Jairus had trusted Jesus to heal. Now he needs to trust the fact that Jesus Christ can raise the dead. He trusted Jesus with her life. Now he needs to trust him with her death. And you do know, of course, that all of this kind of gets messy for us because it shows us that we are not just to trust Jesus with the things that we think that we can trust him for. We're to trust Jesus with the things that he says we can trust him for. We must trust Jesus with the worst case scenario in your life. Put our life in his hands and believe him, not just in the crisis, but in the catastrophe. Jesus shows up at the home to find this huge crowd, and all these people are there, and is crying. And I kind of think of it this way. You know, imagine that someone in the school, you know, Perry, 12-year-old daughter, one of the most prominent people in the community of Perry, she just dies unexpectedly, you know, smashed by a car, you know, on the way home from school, crammo, 12-year-old girl, and everybody knows this family. So they take her to the funeral home, and the whole school unloads and heads over there, and all the people of the community head over there, and it's going to be emotional. I mean, I've seen it when kids in school die. Everybody's crying. Everybody knows the kid. And then, you know, they're all making this big scene. And then verse 39, Jesus asked this startling question. And Sam Alberry calls this the most pastorally insensitive question that Jesus ever asked. Why are you making a commotion and weeping? Can you imagine walking into Watkins? What are you crying about? What do you think you're doing here? Well, the reason he can ask that question is because he knows something they don't know. The child is not dead, but sleeping. Because to Jesus Christ, death is just as fixable and temporary as sleep. It is easier for Jesus Christ to bring someone back from the dead than it is for you to wake your wife up from her nap this afternoon. When it comes to death, Jesus says, "Trust me. Trust me." Why? Because Jesus Christ has more control over death than we do over snoozing. Verse 41. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." I find this just striking because he called the unnamed woman in the street his daughter. That woman with the bleeding called her daughter. Now he called Jairus' daughter, he calls her Talitha, little girl. 42. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement. It's amazing. She's been alive. This little girl's been alive for 12 years, died, and now she's alive. The unnamed woman was sick for 12 years, and now she's well. Both these daughters are healed. Both these daughters are restored. So this little girl is now walking around, verse 43, and he strictly charged them that they should, that no one should know this, and he told them to give her something to eat. She needs a sandwich. Isn't that great? I just love this. Jesus notices that the little girl is hungry and he does something about it. He's that powerful and he's that good. And he says to you and I, trust me. So we trust him because he's powerful. We trust him because he's that powerful and that good. And you stop and think about it. From the beginning of Mark's gospel, Jesus has healed a man with an unclean spirit, a woman ill with a fever. He's healed people oppressed by demons. He's healed people with various diseases. He's cured a leper. He's cured a paralytic. He's turned tax collectors and sinners into disciples. He's healed people of congenital birth defects. He's rebuked the power of the wind and wave with a word. Now, Jesus Christ demonstrates the incredible power to overcome incurable, protracted illness and even death with just a touch. Just a touch. The lesson? He can heal you. Yes, he can. Whatever is disturbing your heart, whatever is between you and God, his timing may not be what you think is best, but it is best. Trust me. And as the Gospel of Mark unfolds, Jesus doesn't ask us just to trust him to fix what is broken. We find out that Jesus is going to fix what broke the world in the first place. He's going to fix all of it.